Shivaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, entitled Parikit Cursed by a Brahmana Boy. Texts 24 and 25. Okay. Ekada Danur Udyamya Vicharan Mrigyayam Bane Mrigan Anugata Shranta Shuditas Trishito Brisham Ekada Dhanu Udyamya Vicharan Mrigayam Bane Mrigan Anugata Shranta Shuditas Trishto Brisham Ekada Danur Udyamya Vicharan Mrigayam Bane Mrigan Anugata Shranta Shuditas Trishito Brisham Ekada Danur Udyamya Vicharan Mrigayam Vane Mrigan Anugata Shranta Shuditas Trishto Brisham Tobisham Ekada Dhanurujamya Vicharan Gayambane Vidana Yigatak Shanta Tobisham Ekada Dhanurujamya Shanta Shuditas Vishito Visham. Ladies, Shanta Vishito Visham. Ekada Dhanu Udyamya Shuditas Trishito Visham Ekada Dhanu Udyamya Shanta Shuditas Trishito Brisham. So the second verse, verse 25, Jalasayam akshakshana pravivesha ashramam dadarsha munim asinam shantam militalochanam. So we go with the synonyms. Ekada. Once upon a time. Danu. Arrows and bow. Udyamya. Taking firmly. Vicharan. Following. Mrigayam. Hunting excursion. Vane. In the forest. Mrigan. Stags. Anugata. While following. Shranta. Fatigued. Kshudita. Hungry. Trishta. Being thirsty. Brisham. Extremely. Jalaasayam. Reservoir of water. Akakshana, while searching for. Pravishesha, entered into. Dadarsha, oh sorry, did I miss? Tam, that famous. Ashramam, hermitage of Samaka Rishi. Dadarsha, saw. Munim, the sage. Asinam, seated. Shantam, all silent. Milita, closed. Lochanam, eyes. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Samika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. Purport. The Supreme Lord is so kind to His pure devotees that in proper time He calls such devotees up to Him and thus creates an auspicious circumstance for the devotee. Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. But by the desire of the Lord, even such a devotee can become apparently fatigued and thirsty just to create a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. The Supreme Lord never forgets His pure devotee, even though he may be engaged in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes He creates an awkward situation, and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. Maharaj Parikshit was to become the medium for the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Sri Krishna, as his grandfather Arjuna was the medium for the Bhagavad Gita. Had Arjuna not been taken up with an illusion of family affection by the will of the Lord, the Bhagavad Gita would not have been spoken by the Lord himself for the good of all concerned. Similarly, had Maharaj Parikshit not been fatigued, hungry, and thirsty at this time, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken by Srila Sukadev Goswami, the prime authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a prelude to the circumstances under which Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken for the benefit of all concerned. The prelude, therefore, begins with the words, "Once upon a time." Om Agira Tamarinda Syaganjana Salakaya Chaksurin militam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the translation once more. Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Samaka Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. So this is the beginning of the pastime that's centered on in this chapter. The chapter is called Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmin Boy. And here we are in text 24, and the pastime is just now beginning with once upon a time, as Prabhupada says, Ekada. So one wonders what happened previously in the first 23 verses of the chapter. I was looking them over, and it's actually very inspiring and instructive to see how Suta Goswami and the sages that he was talking to, the sages of Naimisharanya, prepared themselves to hear this beautiful and very instructive pastime. That in the very beginning of the chapter, we heard from Suta Goswami about the exalted nature of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was by no means an ordinary emperor, but rather we know that while he was in the womb of his mother, Asvatthama threw a brahmastra with the intention of killing him. And he was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. He was not burned by that brahmastra. And the chapter begins by glorifying him because he was always conscious of the Supreme Lord, Maharaj Parikshit. And his whole life he felt completely surrendered to the Lord. And therefore he is worshipable. He's considered a Maharaj, a great soul, Maharaj Parikshit. And also he was able to defeat Kali when Kali came to his kingdom and was trying to destroy the principles of religion. Maharaj Parikshit was not cowered by that, but rather he cowered Kali. And he was able to protect the citizens in his kingdom who might have otherwise succumbed to Kali. It's described in the earlier verses that for those who are self-controlled, they can defy the influence of Kali. But foolish people who lack self-control will be influenced by Kali adversely and do irreligious activities. It's also described something quite extraordinary, that in this age of Kali, we have a special dispensation. That in other ages, even if you thought of sinful activities, you would get a result for that sinful thought. But in this age, you do not get a result for sinful thoughts. You have to actually perform the sinful activities to have an impious result. And in this age, if you simply think of pious activities, you will be benefited. Even if you cannot, for some reason, do them, simply if you have that in your mind, that is beneficial for you. So in this way, Sukadeva Goswami begins this chapter by glorifying Maharaj Parikshit, so we can understand a little bit about his qualities. And then the sages respond to this and express to Suta Goswami how fortunate they feel that they can hear from him. They've been trying to perform a sacrifice for a long time. They feel they're blackened by the smoke because their sacrifice has many imperfections. It's flawed. And they feel that simply by a moment's association with such an exalted devotee as Suta Goswami, they can be purified. And the imperfections in their sacrifice will be compensated for and overcome by this process of hearing about the glories of the Lord and the glories of his devotees. And they encourage him to speak more and more, to describe the Lord more and more, because this is good for them and good for everyone who will, in the future, hear this glorification. And Sutta Goswami replies to this. Before he begins this pastime, he replies to these statements by the sages. And he replies in a very humble way. He says, actually, he was born of a mixed caste. He was not born of a Brahminical caste. But because he surrendered to and was following great Vaishnavas, therefore he was cleansed and purified. And this enabled him to be so fortunate as to hear purely from Sukadeva Goswami when he was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. And now he can also speak these beautiful pastimes. And we heard just prior to this verse, we heard this beautiful metaphor, perhaps. As the birds fly in the sky as far as their capacity allows, so do the learned devotees describe the Lord as far as their realization allows. Such a beautiful metaphor. And we know from the Padma Purana, there are 1 million different species of birds. Some of them fly very high, like the eagles, and some of them stay very close to the ground, like sandpipers, is it? Sandpipers, they run along the shore and don't fly very high. So that's just the nature of the different types of birds, that they fly at different heights. There's no fault in that. So similarly, the learned devotees, as far as their realization allows them, they speak of the glorification of the Lord. And that's to be relished by all of us. So here, finally, we have this once upon a time. We're beginning the pastime now. And Prabhupada here in the purport is pointing out Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. So, we can understand perhaps, I can understand how neophyte I am, because I do become perturbed by fatigue, hunger, and thirst. But, oh, I'm sorry. Is that better? So, when Lord Brahma created this world, before he even created the different species, he created 5 kinds of ignorance. And one of those 5 kinds of ignorance is this false identification with the body, forgetfulness of our actual identity. And from that single type of ignorance, other ignorances cascade forward. For example, we have a false sense of proprietorship, a false sense of ownership, as a result of thinking that we're this body, as a result of identifying with this body. And also we have a sense of a fear of death. If we think that we're the body, then at the time of the body's demise, we'll become very fearful. That's another type of ignorance. Also, we'll become frustrated because we're identifying with something that we are not. And from that frustration, we'll become angry. Another type of ignorance created by Lord Brahma, a very thankless task. And also, we deceive ourselves. We deceive ourselves into thinking we are this body, forgetful of our real identity. So for those who are exalted devotees, they detach themselves from bodily identification. A very powerful analogy is there given by Prabhupada, that if you have a coconut that's quite fresh, the meat of the coconut is attached to the shell. They're very tightly attached. It's hard to get them apart. But as that coconut matures, the meat inside gradually shrinks. And at a certain point, the meat is entirely free of the shell. If you shake it, you can hear the coconut meat inside, separated from the shell. So similarly, in an immature stage, we may still identify with the body and still be disturbed by hunger and thirst and fatigue. But as we mature in Krishna consciousness, following the process that Prabhupada has given us, the acharyas have given us, gradually we become detached and we no longer are disturbed by these things, which is what is expected of Maharaj Parikshit. There are other examples in the Bhagavatam. A famous one is Ranti Dev from the 9th canto. Ranti Dev underwent a fast for 48 days. And at the end of that time, he was prepared a beautiful meal with ghee and wonderful products. And then a Brahmin came while he was, before he could begin this wonderful meal, and said, "I'm very hungry. Will you help me?" And so he, very generously, he was a very giving person. He shared his meal with the Brahmin. And then he was about to take whatever left, and a Sudra came and said, "I'm very hungry. Will you help me?" And being magnanimous, Rantideva agreed and gave some of his food to this Sudra. Then he was about to take the remnants when a Chandala came, or a low-class person surrounded by dogs, and said, "My dogs and I were all very hungry." And again, he shared what he had. And then all that was left was water. And he was about to take the water. It was just enough for one. And a Chandala came, and he gave the water to the Chandala. And so that was revealed that these were personalities who were actually demigods who were testing him. But it shows that he had truly transcended these demands of the body, as a devotee can in the mature state. Even Maharaj Parikshit, later on, we find in the 10th canto, just before Sukadeva Goswami is going to recite the wonderful pastimes of Krishna's appearance and activities. At that time, Maharaj Parikshit says that, "Although I have been listening to you for many days now, I am not disturbed by hunger or thirst or fatigue." He was very fixed. So this episode here, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, is created by the Lord for his particular reason. It was not actually the situation of Maharaj Parikshit. He was above this. But the Lord had an intent. And someone seeing this pastime from a distance may think, "Oh, just see, something very impious is going to happen. He's going to put a snake around the neck of this rishi, and then the rishi's son will become upset, and he'll be cursed, and this is just terrible, what's going on here?" But actually, that person is not seeing the whole picture. And that is the situation of conditioned souls. We tend to just see a little slice of what's going on and make a judgment, this is very good or this is very bad, and miss the Lord's plan. There's an example that was related in Bhagavad Gita, Back to Godhead magazine some years ago that illustrates this point. Very memorable example. That it says there that there was an old farmer who worked his land with his son, and they had one horse to help. So that we had the horse, the son, and the old farmer who were working. And one day, somehow or other, the horse ran away. So the neighbors came and said, "Oh, this is terrible. How are you going to work your land? This is a crisis for you." And the wise farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." He didn't accept that it was such a terrible crisis. And lo and behold, the next day the horse returned with three wild horses. So the neighbors came and said, "Oh, this is wonderful. Now you have four horses. Horses are so expensive. They're difficult to get. Now you've been blessed." And the old wise farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." And then a little while later, his son, who did most of the work because the farmer himself was quite elderly, he was trying to train one of the wild horses, and he got thrown off and his leg was broken. And so the neighbors came again and said, "This is terrible. You can't do this work yourself. What are you going to do now?" And again, the old wise farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." And then a little while later, the emperor of the land declared war. And his constables came around to conscript people, intending to get the son of this elderly farmer. But they couldn't conscript him because he had a broken leg. So the neighbors came and said, "This is wonderful. Your son won't be sent off to war to die." And again, of course, the story goes on like that. So the point is, if we just see a little slice of what's going on, we miss the big picture, and we perhaps miss how the Lord is operating, as can be easily done in this scenario. So we learn from Bhagavad Gita that there are different views of the world, different world views. One is, as described in the 16th chapter, those who are demonic, they think there's no cause, just there's a random combination of material elements that created life. And there's no purpose to this world. And that mentality brings them into the strong grip of lust and greed, because all they see is to acquire as much as they can for themselves, for their own sense gratification. And they have this mentality that's so vividly described: so much do I have today, so much will be mine in the future. He is my enemy and I have killed him, and my other enemy will also be killed, and I will be perfect and powerful and happy. And in this way, they sink to a very abominable state. So that's one worldview, that everything is here by chance, and let me just get as much as I can. Then there's another worldview, which is far more pious, where people see, no, there are pious activities and impious, and if I do impious activities, I'll get a negative result. If I do pious activities, I'll get a positive result. And many of the religions of the world today are operating in this mindset between piety and impiety. And it's also described that demigod worshippers are like that. You worship the demigods, you do pious things, and you can go to the planets of the demigods and enjoy life there. But there's another worldview, which is what is meant for us, and that is that Krishna is behind everything, and we are meant to cooperate with whatever his plan may be. And that is the larger picture that Prabhupada is trying to instill in us in this pastime and in all his teachings also. And we see that because of this scenario, we're going to be blessed by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, as we were blessed by hearing Bhagavad Gita, because of the scenario resulting from Arjuna's apparent bewilderment, apparent confusion. So this is a vision, a world vision, that all of us are expected to achieve. And it's quite contrary to the world vision that's held by 99.9% of the population. There's one beautiful pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that is relevant to this. That Sanatan Goswami, a great, great Vaishnava, when he was traveling to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya, he went through the Jarakanda forest. And at that time, apparently, he drank some water which was impure. And as a result of that, on his body, he acquired wet itches. There are dry itches and there are wet itches. Dry itches don't produce anything, whereas wet itches, in the case of Sanatana Goswami, blood and pus was coming from these itches. It was a terrible situation for him. And when he arrived in Jagannath Puri, he was staying with Haridas Thakur. And every day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to greet these two great Vaishnavas. And he would embrace Haridas Thakur. And Sanatana Goswami would go into a distant place to try to avoid being embraced by Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya would not accept that. He forcibly would go and embrace Sanatana Goswami, to the horror of Sanatana Goswami, because the oozing liquids from his itches would smear over the beautiful body, the golden body of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sanatana Goswami was horrified by this situation. And he would plead with the Lord, please do not embrace me. And the Lord finally explained to him why his mentality was not accepted by the Lord. So I wanted to read that just a little bit, because it's so profound and so meaningful for us as well. So this is from the Antilila. Lord Chaitanya quotes a verse from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse says, anything not conceived in relationship to Krishna should be understood to be illusion, maya. I'll just read that once more. Anything not conceived in relationship to Krishna should be understood to be illusion, maya. None of the illusions uttered by words or conceived in the mind are factual. Because illusion is not factual, there is no distinction between what we think is good and what we think is bad. When we speak of the absolute truth, such speculations do not apply. Then he goes on. This is a famous verse. Dvaite badra badra jnana sabha Manodharma, Abala, Amanda, Asabhabrahma, which means, in the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying this is good and this is bad is all a mistake. Hare Krishna. So I'll just read the purport. It's a short purport. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the absolute truth, ever existing with different varieties of energies. When one is absorbed in the illusory energy of Krishna and cannot understand Krishna, one cannot ascertain what is good for him and what is bad. Conceptions of good and bad are all imaginations or mental speculations. When one forgets that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, he wants to enjoy the material world through different plans. At that time, he distinguishes between material plans that are good and those that are bad. Actually, however, they are all false. So the idea is that whatever we do in the material world, whether it's apparently good or apparently bad, is temporary. And it does not bring us to our constitutional position of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. Whether it's apparently pious or impious. So in that sense, it's considered all bad. That we want to reestablish ourselves as servants of Krishna. And we can do that whatever the apparent conditions are externally. There are examples of... Here's an example we're looking at. This is apparently a disaster for Maharaj Parikshit. And even it's not easy for him. It's described when he's riding back to his kingdom after putting this snake around the neck of Samaka Rishi, because Samaka Rishi apparently ignored him and he became angry at that. Then he was full of repentance. Maybe the Rishi really was meditating. Maybe I acted too hastily. So it was not easy for him. As in the Gita, it was not easy for Arjuna. He was overwhelmed with compassion, so much so that he dropped his famous Gandiva bow and became helpless, such a great warrior, helpless, overcome by this confusion. So it's not that it's easy. And we see over and over again in the Bhagavatam how exalted devotees apparently suffer at the hands of others. And yet they remain fixed in their determination to serve the Lord despite these apparent setbacks. And so here we will find gloriously how Maharaj Parikshit, despite this apparent setback, gave everything up so that he could sit and simply hear the Bhagavatam, and all of us benefit as well from that. Krishna also says this in the 10th canto. There's a question that Maharaj Parikshit asks. He says that the followers of Lord Shiva, they are very opulent. And yet we find that Lord Shiva and Parvati, they just live under a tree. They have nothing. And yet their followers are opulent. And on the other hand, Narayan is in Vaikuntha enjoying all sorts of opulences along with Lakshmi. And we find that his followers are poverty-stricken. They are living under trees. They have nothing. So how is this? It's an apparent contradiction. So in answer to that, Sukadeva Goswami mentions that when the Lord especially favors someone, he takes everything away from that person, just as he is doing here with Maharaj Parikshit. And then his relatives and friends think, oh, such a useless personality, and they abandon him. And so then he's left with nothing except his complete faith in the Lord. And he has the highest benefit as a result of that complete faith in the Lord. So, those are some points. Perhaps there's some discussion on these various points.
Thank you very much for a wonderful class. And many nice examples and wonderful philosophy, all right on with our Sampradaya. So I was just simply wanted to compliment you for this very insightful, very valuable, very useful class. And it's a very good example for many of us who give classes to follow the wonderful example that you have just given. So thank you very much for your class.
Thank you, Matai. In that example that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quotes about good and bad in this material world is just a mental concoction. For people who understand the ultimate goal of life, yes, definitely. But I was just thinking that if in a relative way we can say also that that example, for example, to the conditioned souls, when they do open hospitals or they do charitable things, eventually there will be, isn't it, something good that will raise them up to piety and eventually come to the understanding that what is the ultimate good. Since the Bhagavad Gita also mentions in the 12th chapter, if you cannot do this, do this. If you cannot do that, do this. And ultimately, at least this, do this. Can you explain more of that?
Yes. This vision, that this idea that something is good and something is bad is all illusion, that's for devotees, for people that have not come to the point of devoting themselves to Krishna. Then they want to, as you say, act in a pious way. They certainly don't want to suffer sinful reactions so that they can eventually come to the point of being a devotee of Krishna. And then seeing that whatever happens, I'm simply going to surrender myself to Krishna, whether it's apparently good or apparently bad.
Thank you for your wonderful presentation. It seems that last verse that you quoted doesn't really apply to Maharaj Parikshit. Yasya hamanugranami. Because what Krishna says there is, if somebody wants me and at the same time wants material sense gratification, I take everything away, just like you said, the relatives and friends abandon him, and then he has to turn to me completely, exclusively. But that's not the case we hear, that Maharaj Parikshit was from birth a pure devotee. He was not in that category of wanting Krishna and also wanting material sense gratification. So it doesn't seem to really apply to him.
Well, Prabhupada indicates in the purport, this is an arrangement, an apparent arrangement. Let's see. He wanted Maharaj Parikshit to become a medium for the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Sri Krishna, as his grandfather, Arjuna, was. Had not Maharaj Parikshit not been fatigued, hungry, and thirsty, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken. So in that sense, although he was unattached and a great soul, by this arrangement, he's freeing himself of whatever attachments might be there, whatever residual attachments, you could say. Prabhupada says one has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. So he's kind of indicating that in his purport. You can see it from so many angles of vision, so that is one angle of vision.
Hare Krishna. Just again, one comment about the purport. It appears that by Krishna's arrangement, an awkward situation was also created in Srila Prabhupada's own Grihastha life. That by Krishna's arrangement, he was obliged to give up householder life and begin his preaching mission. Not exactly begin, but began his traveling preaching mission and became the perfect medium, as Prabhupada points out here in the purport, that Maharaj Parikshit became a medium for the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam. and it's a very close, to me anyway, a comparison to how Srila Prabhupada, by Krishna's arrangement, became the perfect medium for spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world.
Prabhupada used that verse from the 88th chapter of the 10th canto in relation to himself. At one point he thought that when he heard the instruction from his spiritual master to preach this message in the English language, he was thinking how to do this. And he thought, well, I'll try to become very wealthy, and then I can use my wealth for this preaching mission. And at one point he was very successful in his business, but then, as you say, his factory in Lucknow was robbed, and gradually things were taken away until he was left, and his relatives and friends did abandon him. So he used this very verse in relation to his own life. Yes. I think there'll be a ceremony at 4:30, was it? After the RT this afternoon. After the deity RT, there's an RT for Radhakund.
Okay. This is on the example of Ranti Dev. Also, first, I wanted to get, what was the... you quoted from the CC, you quoted that story about Sanatan Goswami.
I'll tell you. Chapter 4 in the Antilila, text 176.
27?
176, chapter 4, text 176.
Okay, so in the example of Ranti Dev, why did the demigods give him this situation?
It was for his glorification, to show what a tolerant and generous person he was. Practically unexcelled in our history, that he could do that.
Should we try and take that on?
Are we capable of it?
No.
Thank you for your attention. All glories to His divine grace. Sorry? No.
Just one little point I wanted to make in regard to this translation and purport. Here we have a very excellent example of the principle of yoga maya in action. For some of us who may not understand or know what yoga maya is, it's an illusory energy, but it's not the same as mahamaya. Mahamaya is the illusory energy acting for one's own personal gratification or glorification, whereas yoga maya is acting for the fulfillment and purpose of the Lord's fulfillment and purpose of what he has in mind. So here we have King Pariksit, who is a self-realized soul, meaning very detached, has a strong love for the Lord, and is able to be very sober and unaffected by hunger and thirst and these things. But the Lord afflicted him with those strong hunger and strong thirst, which is completely out of his character. So the Lord will do, and that is done actually as a blessing to the devotee, that the devotee is made to act out of character. We have this with the four Kumaras up in the spiritual world when they want to get into the spiritual world, and they're refused by Jayam Vijay, the four Kumaras curse them. So that is not their normal characteristic. But the Lord arranged that, even he says that, and that's to fulfill a purpose that he has. And he uses the devotees, and the devotees are glad to be used, even if they have to become demons, as long as it's what the Lord wants. And if it's that's what he wants, that's what I want, because it's in my best interest and the best interest of the world. So, again, Yogamaya here, in what you've read, is King Pariksit is made to act in a manner which is totally uncharacteristic of him. And even a little later on, he asks himself, well, why did I do that? There was no purpose, like you were mentioning, putting a snake, you know, around the rishi's neck. I mean, why did I do that? It was like, but that's the whole point. Yogamaya works especially for the devotees, you see. It's not something for the karmis. They have Mahamaya to work for them.
Thank you. All glories to His Divine Grace.
Yeah, thank you.
A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.